Welcome to Plain Talk. Plain Talk has a new podcast every 2 weeks with up-to-date information about aviation technologies for general and business aviation. From home to cockpit to boardroom to personal tech, Plain Talk provides informative information for pilots, industry insiders, and aviation enthusiasts alike. My name is Phil Lightstone. I'm a general aviation pilot with over 1,900 hours in my logbook, flying almost every week with over 30 years' experience in the technology and aviation industries.
Well, I'd just like to introduce Chris Hausmer, co-founder of AirPop, an exciting company founded in 2015, to Plain Talk. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you?
Oh, it's another day in paradise. With that said, Chris, what got you into the mask industry?
Yeah, well, I think my story maybe is not dissimilar from a lot of startup founders, with maybe a few key differences. I really got into it in somewhat of a surprise to myself. I was living in China and working there, running a business. Both my children were born in China.
Oh.
My daughter, when she was an infant, developed quite a severe respiratory reaction or series of reactions to the air. And it was extremely scary and frustrating and concerning. So I think the real story is I was really a concerned, frustrated parent. And I also happened to be a product designer. And those two elements combined with my, my circumstances where I thought, let me look into this. I wonder what's out there that I'm, just trying to get smart about things. And I realized, most of the solutions out there in terms of masking were just awful. and they continue to be awful. So it was a kind of one of these things where it was like, wow, this is like not only is this a hugely underserved need, but it's actually the perfect kind of business to disrupt. So that's kind of how I got into it.
And certainly born out of, a passion to protect your daughter.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I was one of the insights I had was doctors were saying, well, we can't prove that it's the air that's causing her respiratory reaction, although it's reasonable to conclude that. But if I were you, I would just change her environment and see if it improves. And I found this terribly frustrating because, of course, I had the luxury to change her environment. I mean, I could just move back to the U.S., which is what we ended up doing. But there's over a billion people still in China who can't just pick up and move. And air pollution is a pervasive, ambient air pollution is a pervasive problem there. So it's one of these things where when you realize the scale of the problem, this is something that affects almost everyone in the world. And you realize that the total healthcare or welfare fallout costs from ambient air pollution are in the many trillions of dollars. You just start to go why isn't anyone doing something about this?
Don't you think that it's also akin to the secondhand smoking phenomena?
So it's interesting that you mentioned secondhand smoke because what's really fascinating is that in the current climate, I mean, we're dealing with a pandemic. So this is a viral pandemic. A lot of the knowledge experience around environmental health and air quality is really nascent. So a lot of people don't really understand what they need to know about protecting themselves from airborne risks. And secondhand smoke is the one example that most people kind of get intuitively. It's like, oh, if you're smoking over there, that's your personal choice, but it does actually affect my health over here. And droplets and aerosols are the new secondhand smoke. Just breathing nearby someone actually can hurt me. And so I do think that there's a very strong sort of just common sense connection to the secondhand smoke thing. And I find that a very useful metaphor to use when I'm talking to people about you know, fluid dynamics of air and how particles move and things like that.
And certainly, to your point, it's an easy to understand metaphor in that you can see secondhand smoke. You can't really see micron-sized COVID-carrying particles in the air.
That's actually been one of the key barriers in terms of developing a mind shift for people, is that it is an invisible threat. And we react to things that we can perceive, either sensorially or cognitively. And, you know, some air pollution and certainly, you know, micron and nanoscale particles, you know, we can't see. So we develop all kinds of sort of coping mechanisms to deal with that. One of which is to actively prevent yourself from bringing those in. But unfortunately, that's not a strategy most people employ willingly.
Right.
The masks, it turns out, are a category that are kind of a drag. Like, people don't like having to think about masks, and it's kind of a bummer to have to wear one. But honestly, that was part of what appealed to me and my partner, is there's a creative challenge there. How do you take something that isn't sexy or cool and is kind of a bummer and try and shift the perception about it and try and reframe it or recontextualize it in a way that people kind of go, oh, that's cool, I want to try that.
Tell us a little bit about AirPop, founded in 2015. How did you come up with the name?
Okay, well, these are great questions. Our first mask, the one that we conceived, so the one that we were designing in our brains in 2014 before we actually founded the company, was kind of like, what would be like the ultimate mask, you know? And we kind of came at it from this this mindset of like, well, what if, because most masks are these industrial or medical things. They're very institutional looking. They're very kind of disposable looking. And we just thought, well, what if like a Nike did a mask? Like, what would it look like? You know, what would it feel like? How would it work? And it wasn't so much that we wanted it to be a Nike thing. It was more that we wanted it to be perceived as almost like a performance garment, you know, like something that would leverage all of the material science and all of the construction, advanced construction that we know from footwear and outerwear, and put that into a new kind of accessory. And so in the exercise of thinking about that, we also were looking into, you know, respiration and the mechanics of breathing. And it turns out that you need a canopy of air between your face and the mask. And that allows for the proper diffusion of your tidal volume. If the mask is sitting on your face, like some face coverings do, you know, it obviously is a very uncomfortable experience. It's hot, it's wet, you feel oppressed. So by having a little canopy, and we call this the aerodome, you actually allow that gas to diffuse properly, and you're not re-inhaling carbon dioxide and things like that. And so the shape of that profile of that original mask was a necessary feature that we had to build in, but it had to be made out of a textile. So how do you make a kind of a structured textile? And that was really the question. And so we developed a process of molding a fabric, special fabric that we developed. So when we were thinking about the design of the material, we knew we needed a soft structure. We needed a fabric that could hold a sort of have some kind of integrity to it, to hold that profile shape and create that canopy of air. So we developed this knit material, and we were able to kind of form it in such a way that it created an aerodome shape. Now, because it's a fabric, you can fold it, you can crush it, you can wash it, but it'll always pop back into that shape. And so the popping was something that we thought was a really cool, just like functional feature, and it was kind of playful. And that really informed the name of the company. It was kind of like, oh, this thing just kind of pops back into shape, and it's always ready for use. You can cram it in your bag, shove it in your pocket, you know, put it in the glove box, well, every time you pull that, it'll just pop back into shape.
What started you on the journey to create a smart mask?
Yeah, so the smart mask, again, was kind of there from the beginning. We had this vision of doing a smart mask for a few reasons. One of them was that, you know, back in 2014, 2015, and honestly, I can't remember if the Apple Watch was out at that point, but you know, Fitbit was around, and there were fitness trackers, and this kind of IoT and fitness tracking and quantifying, you know, the self was really a trend that was happening. And we were thinking about all the different ways you could measure your health metrics. And it occurred to us that breathing was this really underserved area of our overall health. Yes, you can count calories. You can look at heart rate. You can look at steps. But you can also look at breathing and your breath rate. And it turns out that breathing is not only essential for life, but it's a critical component of our overall well-being, not just physically, but also mentally. And so if you know anyone or if you yourself kind of participate in any kind of mindfulness activities or meditation, breathing is really central to that, and things like yoga. But also if you're in the gym and you're lifting weights or you're doing cardio, you know, it is all, again, about breathing. And so there's a kind of a general awareness around breathing, but there isn't like a really specific and kind of granular understanding of our breathing in the same way that we now have a baseline for our heart rate at rest, for example, versus activity or our steps, you know. So that was one sort of initial thought. But then the other thought was, well, let's say we make a mask that is like kind of cool that people actually want to wear. And we're thinking about young people. And we thought, well, in a market like China, for example, which is a mask-wearing culture, if we could get people to buy into our vision of a protection brand, and we could put a little sensor on all those masks, we could learn a whole lot of sort of at a population level about breathing health. And so we could start to look at doing larger sort of in the wild studies almost on behaviors. And that's something that when you look at respiratory science has never really been done outside of really controlled studies or outside of the lab. And air pollution is obviously something that exists out in the world, not in a lab. And so that it was kind of a simple insight. We just thought, well, hey, look, you know, the sensors are sophisticated enough and cheap enough and small enough that we could just kind of hide it almost on a mask. Obviously tell people it's there, but it wouldn't be in the way. Like it wouldn't feel like an appliance on your face. You know, it would still feel like a soft good. And so that's kind of how we started.
You're not turning into a cyborg.
Exactly, exactly. And I think we've seen a lot of mask companies going that route, you know, building these very high tech looking kind of appliance looking devices. And one of the enduring insights we have from our user base is that nobody wants to put an appliance on their face. Right. People don't even want to put a bandana on their face. No one's going to put like an air purifier on their face. So we knew that the technology had to be discreet. It had to be kind of understated. It wasn't really the story, if you know what I mean. And so we built a very small little sensor suite. It's about the size of three stacked quarters, and it's very lightweight. It lives on the outside of the mask, and you don't need to do anything. You just pick it up and you start breathing, and it starts detecting your breathing. So it was something that we felt the world was ready for. You know, that was kind of as simple as it was, and we spent about 2.5 years developing that product.
Have drank the Kool-Aid around IoT and more data tracking is better. And with that said, let's talk about your cool AirPop app. How long was that in development?
Well, we started in earnest in the spring of 2015, and at the time we had like three different teams in our company. We had
the good, the bad, the ugly.
I hope, yeah. Well, that my teams might disagree with that, but yeah, we could use that. But we had we kind of had to divide and conquer. So we, you know, all of us are sort of outsiders to masks. And that turned out to be a really positive thing because we brought fresh thinking. But we, you know, so we had kind of these three different teams in parallel. One of them was working on the filtration tech and the IP. One of them was working on the material innovation and like designing for the body. So the kind of ergonomics and materials. And then the third team was really our digital team. So looking at the sensor and looking at the app. So the vision for the app was very much we wanted to be the first, we were the first smart mask that would give consumers, you know, this kind of additional insight into their breathing health. And actually, to this day, I think we're still one of the only respiratory input devices on Apple's HealthKit in iOS. And that just gives you a sense of how few, you know, products are out there for consumers in this space. But in any case, the vision for the app was really to be a little bit of a knowledge resource, first and foremost, and then secondly, to be kind of a dashboard for the mask and for your health. And so by knowledge resource, what I mean is our mission is really to kind of deepen our understanding of the air around us and our relationship to the air around us. So there's, you know, we kind of think about it as like there's external atmosphere and then internal atmosphere. So the air that is out there in the world and the air that I'm bringing into my body. And so we wanted to show people that there's a delta between the ambient air quality where you live and breathe and the air quality that you can achieve if you're breathing through an air pop. And so that, just that difference was something that was really part of the vision from the beginning. The other thing, which we haven't quite achieved yet, to be honest, is a pain point we identified early on is that most people have no idea if their mask is doing anything. It's a completely dumb product. So there's no feedback whatsoever. You put on a respirator, a lot of people will put them on upside down. A lot of people will put them on and not understand how to fit correctly to their face. There's a lot of misunderstanding and undereducation around masking. So we thought, wouldn't it be cool if we could actually tell a user if the mask was fitted and sealed properly? And that was kind of the, you know, in a way that was kind of like the holy grail for us, was we want to be able to give users that feedback. And that in particular turns out to be a very, very tricky thing to do when you have a highly permeable, breathable mask. If you had a rubber sealed mask, it would be easier through pressure differential. But because our mask is so breathable, ironically, it kind of works against us for that one feature. But what we were able to do is we were able to look at your breathing behavior and your local air quality, and also take into things like, you know, your gender and age and weight, if you choose to tell us those things. And that actually results in us being able to know how quickly you're degrading your filter. So over time, when's the optimal time to change your filter? And this, it turns out, is another pain point people have, is most people don't really have a firm grasp on like how long they should wear a mask, a particular kind of mask, and if or when they should change it out. And so we're now able to sort of show people through the filter life dashboard exactly when to do that. And so that's been a really big kind of win for a lot of our consumers who've been using this this smart mask. And then the main thing that the app does is that breathing health tracking. So that's the main sort of information portal, is getting to see your own breathing behavior kind of over time, and then start to derive your own kind of baselines around rest and activity.
Self-awareness and putting you on to a better health track. And I suppose that that's a little bit about, you know, creating a fountain of youth.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I definitely agree with you in that I think more information is always better. And I think the job that we have to do is to make sure that we're providing that information in a way that is accessible and usable, you know, and is relevant. And so I think that's really the the in terms of consumer experience, that's really the challenge that we're concerning ourselves with in this version and in our next version. So it becomes very much an information design challenge because, again, you know, they're really, most people don't have this frame of reference yet around their breathing. So we're kind of, we're at the very, very front end of it.
And then you mentioned that, or alluded to a AirPop cloud where data is brought up to your cloud to facilitate some analytics that provides some more more interesting information. Any location or tracking information stored in the cloud?
Yeah, actually, we're not doing that yet. So it's happening locally on the device. It's happening on the sensor itself, and then on your phone. And that's because we're not like a medical device company. So we're not giving consumers like health advice, and therefore we're not really calculating anything beyond just the literal physics of your breathing. So that's like, I guess one distinction I'll just mention is that we do think in the future that there's obviously a you know, a growth path there for us to do more and more sophisticated analytics and sensing and things like that. But we're not at that point now. The app does ask if you are okay if we're giving access to your location. And that's an opt-in, so it's not, you know, a default or anything like that. So if users do opt-in, that information would be stored on local servers in the market that, you know, the consumers are in, according to, you know, in the U.S. it would be CCPA, in Europe it would be GDPR. You know, so it's very much kind of garden variety cloud storage.
Perfect. And I take it that's a little bit about pulling down localized pollution indexes off the internet.
Yes. Well, so this is an area for your audience who may be a bit more technical than the average person. This is actually a very interesting area. Most major metropolitan areas do measure air quality around the world. So, you know, most countries and most cities, we'll be monitoring air quality and then syndicating, you know, kind of open sourcing that data set hourly or even more frequently, but it's available data. And so there's a number of sources for this information. And the trouble is, so it's good and bad. I mean, the great thing is that we can measure what's in our air with more accuracy almost every day that goes by. So we're getting better and better at sort of measuring the stuff and we're getting smarter about it. The bad news is that there is no sort of universal standard or protocol for how we measure and how we calculate and communicate those statistics or those stats of information. And so we're in a very weird situation where in China, for example, they have a certain way of calculating their sort of rolled up air quality index number. It's a composite number that includes all the individual contaminants. In the US, we have a different way of doing it. And so the numbers themselves, the actual number itself, when you look at the AQI, not only are they different depending on where you happen to live, but even if you're using, even if you're looking at both air quality indices from the one place that you live, you'll see a difference. And even the index itself, which is generally understood to be 0 to 500, 0 being the best and 500 being the worst, don't really fully calibrate across the board. Subsequently, you end up with a kind of a mishmash of standards and a mishmash of reported air quality numbers. So it's getting worked out, you know, kind of slowly globally, but it's a frustration because without a standard, it's very difficult for us to have to be able to provide that, you know, that trust to consumers. But that's essentially what we're trying to do.
Sure. So is AirPop going to become the Switzerland, if you will, of data unification and normalization to around pollution standards?
that would be a dream of ours. This is unfortunately what's one of those like wicked problems. It involves many stakeholders at various altitudes in many different places, and so it's a bit of a cat herding exercise at this point. But what we are doing, for example, is in the app, we are allowing users to choose which data set they want to use. So for example, you know, you can choose to use China's standard, and so you'll get their version of the AQI, or you can choose to use the US standard, and you can get our version of the AQI, and India and Europe, et cetera. So in some sense, we're giving users the power to choose, but in terms of like clarifying or cleaning up the current state of air quality measuring and reporting, that unfortunately is something that's going to be done at a governmental level. And you kind of, you know, you kind of think, well, it's going to come with all the attendant kind of bureaucratic and slowness, you know, stuff that when governments collaborate on stuff like that. So we don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but we know that it is happening slowly. So what we can do is we can just try and provide as much clarity and as much choice and knowledge as we can to our consumers.
So you probably get a lot of questions, I'm sure I'm not the first, about COVID-19 and the subsequent viruses.
Yeah.
So how does your mask fare in the COVID-19 protection game?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really glad you asked. I'm really, really happy to talk about this. So one of the things that I take a lot of time and care around is talking about our protection posture. And there's a few things that I want to just like kind of say to contextualize this, that in the world of air quality, there are three basic airborne threat types. So the one we're dealing with now is pathogenic. And that includes like viral, you know, epidemics, SARS, bird flu, swine flu, COVID-19. These are essentially social threats because other people are the enemy in a sense. And so, you know, so pathogenic threat is one core part of the airborne threat ecosystem. The second type would be ecologic. So this is anything that's naturally occurring in the environment, like allergens, pollen, dust from desertification, wildfire smoke, volcanic eruption, things of that nature. And then the third one would be anthropogenic, which is human-made pollution. So this is principally carbon combustion, you know, from factories and plants and automobile emissions and things like that. So you've got this sort of, you know, wide variety of different types of pollutants and threats. And from the very beginning, AirPop knew that because our mission was respiratory protection for personal and public health, we knew that we needed to have the most robust approach to protection possible. So from the outset, we developed our filtration technology to cover all three of these threat types. So pre-pandemic, you know, we were already doing that because in China, it turns out where we started is kind of the perfect market for developing a product to deal with airborne threat types because they have all three all the time. There's always air pollution. There's always some kind of environmental or ecologic threat. We get a lot of dust from the Gobi Desert. There's a lot of crop burning in the south. And then we have this almost seasonal like epidemic thing happening with SARS and swine flu and bird flu. So, and it's a mask wearing culture. So people wanted to not have to think about, well, which kind of mask should I wear for which kind of threat? No, we just want to have one mask. It covers everything, and it's the indispensable kind of choice. So when it comes to COVID, the important thing to know is that viruses are nanoscale. So a virion in its naked form is an order of magnitude smaller than microscale, which is what most masks can filter. But we now know that transmission happens through a vehicle, which is spit or saliva. So spit and saliva is microscale. So it is accurate and correct to say that our masks do protect or defend against COVID-19 through the transmission vehicles that we know now are happening, and that is aerosols and droplets. And the reason we know that is because our filtration tech is, we're 99.3% efficient for particulate matter down to PM 0.3. We are 99.9% efficient for bacteria, and we have a fluid barrier. So there's three layers of protection there. And the fluid barrier is helpful for liquids, obviously, but it does, the material itself is hydrophobic, and then we have an additional fluid barrier layer on there. So any kind of droplets or aerosols that hit the mask will be, you know, resisted. And then anything that's in those droplets, you know, will be also entrained in the filter material itself. So the last thing I'll say about our filters in the context of COVID is that a lot of masks on the market you'll see have valves. And we actually, across our entire product line, are two-way protection. So it means that we're protecting the wearer and we're protecting the people around the wearer. And that was an important, you know, that was an important key benefit that we, you know, we felt very strongly about early on.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks are undereducated around masks and wearing that, you know, $3 Walmart or Amazon cloth mask is more about the wearer protecting the other folks around them that perhaps might not be wearing masks.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me that you could add a fourth level, taking the halo sensor and make it flash red to facilitate social distancing. Stay away from me, if you will.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In the app, you can actually change the color of that ring light on the outside to be red.
Fun.
And so there's a kind of there's a little customization aspect to it where you can choose your favorite color out of like seven colors or something like that. And red is one of them. So you'll see it, you know, that light will kind of breathe with you as you breathe. So it doesn't blink, but it kind of pulsates.
From an aviation perspective, you know, as we're flying with headsets, which have ear cups and microphones, have you ever thought from an aviation perspective, and perhaps the market isn't big enough, but of adding a microphone onto the smart device?
You know, we actually had thought about it, but maybe for a different reason. We never really seriously considered adding a microphone for communication. The reason is because our masks are extremely breathable and lightweight, so it doesn't impede voice in any way. So if you're talking on the phone, or like I'm actually wearing a mask right now and I'm talking to you on my AirPods, and you probably can't tell that I'm wearing a mask.
Thank God you're keeping me safe over the pesky communication.
Right.
We never know what could come across onto my iPhone. You do sound crystal clear, no doubt. I would never have guessed you were wearing a mask.
But we did consider /are considering microphones, because there's a different application there, which is some respiratory disease states are detectable sort of subsonically. So there's a wheezing that the body produces that the human ear cannot hear, but highly calibrated microphones can. And, you know, one of the visions of AirPop Halo platform is looking at biomarkers for disease and early indicators for respiratory illness, things like COPD, apnea, obviously asthma. So microphones are a really great way to do that. And that's actually why we've been thinking about microphones.
So sounds like you have a complete, you know, vision and roadmap for IoT-izing dumb masks and turning them into smart containers.
Yes, I mean, we think that it's one of these interesting questions, which is like, are people in the West going to continue to wear masks after the COVID threat kind of subsides? And lots of people have lots of different opinions about this. My opinion happens to be that I think, by and large, we'll have seen, you know, after the fact, looking back, that mask wearing actually helped a number of other things, like our flu season. I think it will turn out was much reduced because of masking compliance. And it'll be more at the rate that we see in East Asia, where there is a mask culture, where the flu is really, really not as profound there as it is here. And I think there's a certain percentage of the population who will certainly continue to, if not wear masks regularly, understand and the need and keep them at hand. And so we do think that there is a real potential there for people to think of AirPop kind of like they think of Kleenex or Band-Aid. It's we're kind of an everyday essential. You don't need it all the time, but you want to have it everywhere just in case. And so we imagine AirPods in the glove box, in your desk drawer, in your purse or backpack, briefcase, you know, in the all the bathroom cabinets, you know, just always available and always at hand. And when you start thinking in those terms, you kind of think like, well, yeah, you could actually enable those as well with a simple, cheap sensor that isn't super sophisticated or expensive, but is also able to give us, again, that incremental and distributed sort of insight into behaviors and kind of population level health. And I think that's really the interesting idea there that we're kind of, you know, we're focused on.
I think, as you said, you know, personal safety through proper mask wearing and mask gear, but then adding in the high value being the data that the app drives and helping you to impact your personal health. So with that said, what's on the horizon?
We are right now working on a number of partnerships that actually I'm not at liberty to discuss just yet, but there's some pretty cool things going on in terms of partnership. And one of those is just sort of broadly speaking is looking at the health of cities. So it's a kind of a city level study where AirPop's smart masks are kind of one of the inputs. And that kind of integration with other kinds of fixed and mobile sensing, you know, starts to become really exciting for us. And another one involves micro mobility within cities and understanding, for example, you know, the idea of bike sharing in cities is interesting. And you would think a better alternative for a number of reasons, one of which being health. You know, it's healthier for me to ride 20 minutes to get to my next appointment than to drive for 5. And it also has the attendant sort of benefits of not, you know, one less car on the street for that 5 minutes. But it turns out if you live in a polluted city, riding a bike for 20 minutes is actually worse for you than getting in a car for 5 minutes. And so you start to realize these kind of really interesting trade-offs are going on, but you don't really think about it until you can quantify it and measure it. And so we're involved in a number of these kind of very interesting studies. And through that, we have a number of kind of partnerships going. So we're excited to kind of, you know, move into the next phase of consumer offerings. But we're probably still, you know, a year or two away from announcing anything. But that's kind of where we're at in terms of thinking about the future. And other than the tech side, we think that, again, masking is something that will have kind of a long tail. It won't be with everyone, but for the people that really care, and especially those people with kids, we found being prepared with, you know, the right mask is something that people are going to value. And so we're really focused on serving, you know, those most vulnerable and kind of most underserved or most in need segments of our population.
Well, Chris, sounds like you have a very cool company, and what you do day in, day out is fundamentally protecting people. Thank you so much for being part of Plain Talk.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plain Talk. If you have any ideas for a future Plain Talk episode, please go to the Contact Us page at plaintalk.ca and send in your idea. Don't forget to like us at plaintalk.ca, our Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and this podcast. And never stop living the dream.